this is going to be one of the most profoundly thought-altering half-hour discussions we do in this seminar. And because we're going to talk to somebody who is masterful at a dual skill, thinking critically both about databases, about the selling cycle, about who is prime prospect, who isn't, how to turn semi-prime prospects into prime prospects and prospects into buyers and buyers into repeat buyers. But she also is masterful at the human element, which is the connectivity and how to have conversations with these levels of buyers, prospects, and progressive levels of motivation to buy. And she's just incredible. Her background is stunning. She was half of the team that helped Salesforce.com go from tiny to mighty. She is co-author of a book that almost every high-priced, intangible technology and service company has read, called Predictable Revenue. It takes a premise that I don't want to try to explain myself because it'll be a disservice to her. She has worked with some of the most sophisticated and the most high-performance, fanatical corporations and entrepreneurs in the country. And she's going to share for a half hour insight that, to my knowledge, nobody else really comes at and understands. So, Mary Lou Tyler, it's a delight and a pleasure.
Very nice to be here, Jay. Thank you for inviting me.
This is going to be wonderful. So we have watching and listening, if we have any video problem, a broad spectrum of entrepreneurs representing everything from one-person entities, professional services, large corporations, manufacturing, distribution, retail, wholesale, you name it, they span the gamut. They are, to their credit, here because they want three things. They have a prejudice that they are trying to understand on how to add more value and create more worth for their market, for their client, for their buyer, but they don't know how. And they are striving to perform at much higher levels in every facet of performance enhancement, but they really don't know what those facets are. So today we're going to be Discovery Day. We'll call this the day that they have their epiphany. So why don't we start by a little background, but it's going to be faster, on who you are, what you've done, how you got sort of to discover what you focus on now, and some of the very interesting insights as you made that discovery that will resonate with each of our audience, because you'll show them things they never have thought about that are, they're immutable, but nobody really grasps it, let alone acts on it. And anybody who does has great advantage. And why don't you just sort of roll with it, and I'll interrupt you occasionally.
Okay, sounds good. Okay. Well, thank you, everyone. It's nice to be here, whether it's video or audio. And the way I got started in this business was purely from an engineering point of view. It was purely from trying to crack the code of how to have conversations with people we don't know, and to replicate those conversations in a way that we can create a consistent, predictable, and hopefully scalable process to create new business and predictable revenue. As I was getting into this framework, this process, this engineering-ness that I put together, I realized that the data was starting to tell me things about the people we were putting through the framework. And not losing sight of the fact that we are having conversations with people, I started to dive into that conversation and understand more so about the why behind the pipeline lagging, or why things were falling out. And I realized that there are two components to this. There is the pipeline, the velocity of the framework, the process of going from cold conversation to a qualified opportunity and beyond. But there's also the conversations within that process that help us move people through respectfully, authentically, and consistently. And so that's how I decided to go through each step of my process and understand the people within that step and how we can better have conversations with them to a point where predictably we can move them through.
Great. Now I want to make a couple points. Everyone, pay very careful attention that Mary Lou is talking about conversations, interactions, communication at a very, I'm going to use the word intimate, meaning just one-on-one, that there are different levels of progression. There are sub-conversations within it. When she says a pipeline, that presupposes that you understand that you have target audiences. You are bringing them in from some means, whether it's online, offline, cold calls, direct mail, emails, banner ads, earned media, whatever you're doing, they are flowing through, and theoretically you have a systematic process that is advancing, enhancing them from whatever level of interest or commitment they have to the ultimate level of purchasing, and then the ultimate level of staying or repurchasing. Continue.
So taking further into Jay's point, the first step of this is to really understand your strengths, your weaknesses, what opportunities are out there for you, and what threats you may have, which we call SWOT. And then we take that SWOT, we line it up against the types of companies who we think are the highest revenue potential for us with the highest probability of closing. So now we have this list. And as Jay said, how you get the list, there's a myriad of ways to do that. But it does consist of targeted companies or targeted people, if you're a solo going after a consumer-based market, that you think will close quickly, that will also meet the profile of the perfect type of client. Then, if you're in a corporation, you may have more people sitting around the table making that decision about whether to use your service or your product. So then we drill down from companies to people in companies. All along the way, what's happening is we're starting to uncover the habits, the thoughts, the personal pain, the strategic pain, the financial pain that these people are having. And what I've done is taken that conversation and encapsulated it in the form of a machine-based communication mechanism called an email or a phone call in some cases. And we take that conversation and allow people to self-select where they are along that spectrum of behavior. As an example, there may be people who are oblivious to what you have to offer and why you matter. So there's conversation that we start thinking about having that will move them from this oblivious and unaware state to a state of awareness. They may still be apathetic, but we're using the process and technology to understand exactly where they are along that spectrum.
Now, let me ask an interruptive question. And for everybody's clarification, explain how you use, just quickly, the technology, but explain the kind of conversations, just lightly, that you might have with that category vis-a-vis what you will introduce in a few minutes, which is a more motivated category.
Well, in the unaware case, for example, what we've tested, again, because I'm a process person, everything is tested and iterated and made better and changed. So I really subscribe to the lean methodology of you put something in, you test it against something else, and then you iterate and improve. And now at this...
I want to ask one more. I'm sorry, it's respectful. It's so ironic. Now, this is a worldwide phenomenon that I've seen, and you deal with corporations that are much more conviction-based and predisposed towards this, but people try to make decisions that affect their revenue, their sales, their very success by conjecture, when in fact the data will always, always, always tell you where to go forward, where to stop, where to turn right, where to concentrate if you just ask it and understand the answers it gives you, don't you think?
I agree, but you ask it meaningful questions, not vanity questions. The number of dials in a day is not going to tell you anything, really.
Yeah.
But the number of meaningful conversations you have in a day, now that's a metric that can drive predictable revenue.
And I love that because you have taken the generic concept of contacts or just discussions, and you have really bifurcated. There's just idle conversation, there's patronizing, and then there's meaningful conversations. And you've taken it to mean something very differently. Why don't you give us a 1 or 2 minute definition of your interpretation of what these should mean as far as the connection, the outcome, etc.?
Okay. I'll do it in the form of a metaphor.
Great. I love metaphors.
Imagine that you're on a freeway and you see an exit. That exit has a defined meaning. It allows you to get off the freeway. It's the same thing with a meaningful conversation. If you are at that exit, a meaningful conversation will either A, get you off the freeway, B, you'll decide not to take the exit and go further in on the freeway, so you're moving forward, B, or it'll actually tell you to inch forward maybe, but you're not quite sure if you're going to go off or if you're going to continue forward. So you're at a standstill, meaning you're not going anywhere. Those three areas have advancement or out, you leak out, you advance forward, or you stay where you are. And so that allows us to predict lag in the pipeline and also why things are falling out. Why did you take that exit? What was it about that exit that you decided to leave? And so we track all of those conversations that have either forward movement or movement out of the pipeline. Those are meaningful.
And an interruption. I don't think many entrepreneurs and even many CEOs of corporations, enterprises in Asia even think that way. And I'm not demeaning them. I just don't think you've been trained to look at, okay, if somebody takes the exit, meaning they really, they don't want to go forward in the conversation or in the process, you have to question, number one, is it an indicator of a flaw in your proposition or your level of what I'll call gestation or progression, or is it a question you're targeting the wrong audience? I mean, it tells you something.
It tells you exactly, yes. And that's what's so exciting about this, because as you just mentioned two very different issues. One is skills-based. You're not able to tell people your value. Why change? Why now? Why you? You're not able to articulate that in a conversation versus they're going out because you have the wrong list. You have the wrong ideal customer. People are not interested in what you have because they don't fit the profile that you're really going after. How cool is that to be able to tell that after you hang up that phone call?
It's profound, and the power it gives you. And I've used this for a couple of other interviews. One of my partners, Carlos Diaz, who you've heard from many times, has this very simple. You got a lot of really great, great perspectives. But one is your goal as a value-based competitive enterprise is to put maximum advantage in your hands and move maximum disadvantage over to the competition. Right. And this is probably the ultimate way to accomplish that.
Yes. And you have the ability now to what we call wrap up that meaningful conversation. And why I love that too is because here's another signpost that you can, if you're in a corporation, maybe you heard some language from your buyer that marketing has no idea of. So you're going to wrap up that call with intel for your marketing folks to say, look, this guy's talking about Y, we're talking about Z, we need to change our marketing, or at least incorporate this into our marketing. So that's one area, immediate feedback.
And then you can test it.
Exactly. Exactly. So you were asking me about this unaware, oblivious state. You know, what kinds of messaging do we use?
Yeah, just example.
An example would be a tweet, a LinkedIn blog post, a LinkedIn group discussion message that you start a conversation that way. You put something out on your network of LinkedIn folks challenging them about a particular topic. That starts raising that awareness that all is not well. Or maybe there's something I should be thinking about that I hadn't thought about. Gee, my peers are thinking about this. Maybe I should too. So the attention span at that level is about 30 seconds or less. It's like a billboard. You're going by the freeway at 80 miles an hour and you see a billboard. That's the messaging that we have to have at that level.
But your strategic objective in this scenario is to get them a little further into awareness and perhaps interest.
And we do that by utilizing technology in the form of what's called a click-through, that if we give them a link to go to another piece of content, we have written that content so that we can determine where they are behaviorally. Are they in the interested state? Are they in the aware state? Will they consume this information? And we keep feeding them these little nuggets, what I call squirrel feeding. We keep feeding them these little nuggets of content until they're just downloading that white paper or downloading that case study or reading an ebook or whatever it is. And that gives you, as the business developer, the intel you need to give them a phone call now. They should go right into your calling queue when they get to that interested and evaluating stage.
Yeah, you are a sophisticated dyad. You are very technology-oriented and a very, I would say, empathic, marketing-oriented person. And we're talking to people that may or may not be, should be, but may or may not be. So some of the language she's using is abbreviated industry parlance. But what it means is you should always be grasping intelligence from your market that tells you what to do more of, what to do less of, what or whom to target, who not to target, when they are ripe to be more aggressive in your efforts to really move them towards sale. And again, it depends on what you're selling, but I'm just trying to give them a little bit of commentary on what you're saying.
Yeah, it's like we're on a big date. And when we first meet somebody, we sit at the table, we're not quite sure where the conversation is going to go. So we're unaware of what's going to happen. Then we may place a request or we may ask a question that is designed to give us more information about this person. So then they become aware of us, we become aware of them. As we start through dinner, we start learning more about what they like to eat, whether they like to drink, and we become more interested in their habits. It's no different with these messages going through with your buyers. You know who your buyers are. You know their habits. It's just what we're doing is we're encapsulating that conversation into strategic points along our sales pipeline so that way you can better predict who's going to be signing up with us consistently, and then we can scale our operation.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to the beginning and make a point. You made a point. You know who your buyers, your clients, your customers, your audience is, but you don't always know what you know. So I'm assuming if you were coming in to work with any of the people watching, and I would love to see you do that with the ones appropriate because I think the results would be profoundly improved. But the first thing you would do is have them figure out what they know that they don't know they know about who their best, who their specialized clients are, where they are, where they
right.
come from, where they buy the fastest, the slowest, which ones have the most ongoing lifetime value, etc., right?
Yes, in fact, a very quick story about a client I visited in New York recently. They established themselves in 1985, so they're a large company. We went through this exercise, as I do with everyone, is, okay, who are these companies? Tell me about them, what their size is, how many people, what kinds of roles are there? And we came up with a definition that was completely 180 from what they thought they needed or had. And so we said, okay, good. So now we looked at the people within the company, and we came up with definitions there. We always name our personas, you know, like Betty, the bookkeeper or whatever. So Betty, we found a Betty, and we determined that there were 40,000 of these Bettys in LinkedIn that we could actually market to.
Wow.
When we looked in our database that we had 400 Bettys. So we discovered very quickly, just by going through these exercises, that we weren't marketing to the right people all this time. Spending thousands of dollars every month on catalogs and whatever for direct mail.
To the wrong market.
To the wrong person.
Or to a market that was very, very suboptimal, because there were only a small number, if any, Bettys within there.
Right. I mean, the aha moment of the CEO was incredible. So you guys are not alone. This happens in large corporations. So now, everyone should go through this exercise.
It's fabulous. Can you share, because I like to excite and stimulate people with the before and after possibilities without, and we want to go through the other categories, so I'm doing you a disservice, but I think sometimes to sustain and expand and accelerate the audience's enthusiasm, if you give them a little bit of a taste of what the before and after can look like in any and all levels, whether it's time, whether it's personnel, whether it's reallocation of resources, dollars, yield, anything that would just get them excited, that would be worth them appreciating the power of this, and perhaps them appreciating the power you have in your hands and your mind.
Okay, the first one I'll tell you is more in line with the solo entrepreneur.
Okay.
I had a young guy out of the East Coast again who read the book, and he placed an outreach call to me directly saying, Mary Lou, I'm one person. I have this great idea. I don't have any tools. I don't have any technology. I have Excel. Can you help me? And so I thought, sure, I can help you. As long as you know that we're going to be going through a process, it's one tool. I want you to do other things to reach out to potential clients, but this is one area that we'll focus on. So we started out at zero. And in 1 year, with him following my advice, just using Excel, he generated $2 million in revenue. Now, granted, he had a great product.
But that's a pre-assumption.
He was just a great student. You know, he had that desire, but he also had what I call habit.
Yeah.
Whenever I asked him to do something, he would do it, and he would do it in the block times we had established, and just heads down, go. But he was amazing, and he ended up getting funding for his company because he was able to show them, the venture capitalists, that predictably he can generate this many quality conversations in the pipeline. So they funded him.
And I have to make a repetitive statement. Hold on one second. There's a phone here that was supposed to be taken out. I keep hearing it. Let me move it, please.
Okay.
Sorry.
Not a problem.
The universal thread that travels continuously within your commentary and your expertise is a word that most people inherently want but never really reconcile. Predictable revenue, predictable, what I would call, progression, closing, knowing, maybe not exactingly, but with outrageous certainty that if you target a certain market, a certain way, and you deal with these, and I haven't let you identify all the different categories between not knowing and not interested all the way to ready to buy, that you can predict not just today, tomorrow, next week, next month, and you can adjust depending on any vagary in the market from economic to different media, either yields or dilutions. It's pretty damn powerful.
It is. And it's really focusing on a number of components, but the one that comes out the most is the habit of continuing to look at the results that are coming from your work, fine-tuning, tweaking, enhancing, getting rid of stuff that's not working, pivoting if you have to, but never giving up.
I love that.
That is an important part of this whole thing.
So I'm not going to do you a service, and I adore your work, and I just find what you do so powerful in its logic and its and what it delivers. So let's talk a couple more successes. We had the young man that generated $2 million. Let's take something sublime, just so people can see the scope of what you're dealing with, just by understanding and harnessing this really, really elegantly obvious, logical, and immutable power force.
Another example is, fast forward to now, $50 million company,
okay,
who had multiple offices throughout the world, and they had what I would call a bunch of lone wolves. So their sales team were generating, they were prospecting, they were closing, they were servicing. And what we did was one simple change, and that is we separated the roles. So what that means is we took a salesperson, we found out what their love and passion was, and we put them into either a lead business development role, we put them into a closing role, or we put them into an account management role. So we shifted the entire sales organization to more specialist and specialized. You know, it was a painful thing to do, but we went through that with them, and within 3 months, they were cranking out this predictable stream of qualified opportunities. The people who went into business development, there was a little bit of shifting going on there, because it is having conversation with people we don't know and trying to drive them through the pipeline to a qualified opportunity. It also had us looking at, once again, these ideal customers. They did not have the ideal list. And it was very obvious when we went through these simple exercises that they were also calling into the wrong organizations. And the main reason why is because their marketing department was casting this wide net out, and people who came in through the website may not have been a good opportunity. They were small. They didn't have the right technology in place. So we were able to then take that list and fine-tune it and target it, add to it using list purchases, and then create this machine. So each now region had business developers that generated qualified opportunities.
And a developer is the first level. He or she's job is to uncover and initiate conversation and then move the qualified or the seemingly appropriate people over to the next level.
Right. And they work as a team. So the closer really works very closely with the business development person to decide where in that handoff should take place. Because some closers like more control. Some closers are fine with the business developer taking them further into the pipeline. So we were very respectful of that. And because it's a process, we were able to track where the optimal handoff was. And so very soon after we implemented and activated the process, we were able to come up with a pretty solid playbook so that we can onboard new people. If they said to me, we need $2 million in Germany, we knew exactly how many people we needed to put in place to generate that $2
million. That's the power of that is unbelievable. So let's go through real quickly. So you know the four or five categories that you have identified that will exist in virtually any selling environment, no matter whether it's extraordinarily expensive, intangible, multi-stage selling, multi-decision maker, or it's something that's single step and single buyer. What are the stages?
The first stage is this oblivious or unaware stage, where the intended buyer that you're looking for doesn't know anything about, or hasn't really thought about what it is that you have to offer and why that affects them. So it's why change?
Okay.
They don't even know the why.
And it could, and I'm just interrupting, it could apply to selling a generic product or service. It could be a disruptive product or service. It could be an alternative. An example is maybe they take supplements for weight loss and you're trying to sell either better supplements, or you could be selling a membership to a gym, or you could be selling a personal trainer, just as an example.
Yes, or just recently here in Des Moines, where I'm located, I take my dogs to a play area. She has a van that can take you to and from. I was not aware of it. I was oblivious to that. That would have made my life so much easier, but I had no idea. Okay. So, it could be that level.
Okay. So, first is whatever you call it, oblivious or unaware and uninterested.
Yes, unaware. The next one is awareness, but apathetic.
So they know about it, but it's not really moving.
No, you're not
emotionally
sitting in your chair. You're not kind of like ready to go. You're just sort of like hands on hips, show me, in that kind of mode. So you're not really engaged to the why change. Why should I make a change? And it doesn't affect me. So that's the next state. The state after that is called thinking about it or interested. So now you're thinking, okay, I'm sitting a little bit forward in my chair. This is sounding interesting. Maybe I want to know more about it. Maybe not, but maybe I do. So I'm going to consume more content at this stage. See, what I want you to understand is that as we're going through these different stages, the content is driving the positional, where they are positionally, because we're able to do that by how we write this content and how we get them to move to that next state. And then, of course, the last state is where we all wish all of our clients were, which is the hurting and evaluating stage.
Okay.
And that's where most of the content that's out there today is written for. And that's why we have trouble predicting sales. And we have trouble consistently moving people through, because we're not respectful of where they're at. We think they're interested. They have no clue. So we need to be able to create content for them at every one of those thought stages, and then help guide them and gently pull them through by clicking through to content that is probably longer, probably explains more about the why, and then gets them engaged. So they're now sitting on the edge of their seat waiting for us to contact them.
You like metaphors, and I'm stuck with haunting metaphors from marketeers that have been mentors of mine for years. And one of them was, he's deceased, Gary Halbert, but he had the greatest metaphor that I think can be applicable to this. He said, did you ever think about how a tugboat connects to a 20 or 30 story tall oil tanker? And if you think about it, there's this little tugboat.
Right.
And it's one story tall. And it has to connect at the top of 10, 20 stories of huge super tanker. How do they get that rope that's that big and probably weighs, you know, I don't know how many tens or twenties of pounds per inch or foot over the bow of that boat? And I was very fascinated. But the way they do it, and it's an analogy and a metaphor for this, is they shoot a very small cord over the bow. It goes over the bow, a little one. Attached to it is a little larger one. Attached to it is a little larger one. Attached to it is a much larger one. And ultimately, at the end is the big one, but that's the only way they can do it. And that's a good metaphor, because I don't think people have ever thought about these categories. And it's very important And we're going to only have a few minutes, but let's go through a little bit of a montage of just a couple of the vehicles once you understand the differences in the meaningful conversations and the way they can be meaningful, whether they are literal, meaning a person talking to somebody, mm-hmm. or virtual, meaning a communication that is occurring on a website or an e-zine or a white paper or a webinar or a seminar or a sample or whatever it is. Just some examples so people can see what is possible.
Okay, so at that oblivious and unaware, we talked about tweeting, about reaching out to your network, what I call a first and 10. If you are connected, for example, on LinkedIn, and you have 20 people who are connected to you, you send those 20 people a thought-provoking email. One question. Quick question is the title of the subject line. Quick question, dot, dot, dot. And that starts getting people aware, to the aware state. Now, the difference is with all of our communication at this top part of the pipeline, from cold conversation to qualified opportunity, everything we write has a strong call to action, meaning that we want that person to do something, whether it's clicking through to a beefier piece of content, or it's replying to our email, or it's giving us a call. So everything we write, we don't just put it out there without some action on their part. Why? Because the action tells us as a signpost where they're going to go. Because we're telling them, if you go here, we know they're going to be more of an aware state. Or if you tell them to go to a case study and they actually go to the case study, they're probably more in an interested state.
Yep.
So we're spoon feeding them the path and the map that gets them to a point where we're ready for that conversation with them. That's at the oblivious unaware state. When you get to aware, maybe you publish a should ask questions list.
Okay.
Maybe you do a frequently asked questions. Maybe you do a one-page wireframe, meaning just on one page, a case study that's contrast before and after. And that's it. But in all these pieces of content, there is a signpost saying, if you want to know more, go here. Okay? Once we get to the interested state, then everyone knows what we do there, because that's what we see all the time. It's endorsements, it's testimonials, it's case studies. It may be some industry paper that you chunk down into 3 to 5 slides to put on SlideShare. And then the last stage is that evaluating stage, where now you've got to put the testimonials and endorsements in a big way of why you. So interested, that state we just talked about, is why change, why now? And then why you is that evaluating stage. So the content is driven more towards the successes that your clients have had as the result of working with you. And we continually systematize that, and we're respectful to do that for the Bettys of the world or the Nathans who are in IT, or, you know, depending on your people sitting around the table making that decision, we customize the content for each of those people.
And so I can translate for you. There's no right or wrong. You as a company, you as a entrepreneur or a CEO, you can decide you want to have 10, 20 different target audiences that you are pursuing for the same or different variations of your product or service mix. But the key is you've got to target them differently. And once you figure out who they are and where they are in both terms of how you reach them, but also where they are in their mindset, there's plenty of inventive ways to get access to them. Most people don't even realize there's plenty of ways to do that. But the first thing is, who are you trying to reach and why are you trying to reach them, and what level of interest, communication, and viability do they represent?
Correct. And then you get into the head of, how do they consume content? Are they a Sunday morning after the kids are fed? Do they read their email? Do they look online? Do they go to an industry a website? Think like that when you're trying to get your content out there. And don't just go one spot. Don't just use email. Use 3 to 5 different methodologies. Shame on all of us now, because the internet allows us to be huge marketing houses if we wanted to.
Yeah, with very little risk and cost.
Yes, not the way it used to be, where you would send a letter out and cross your fingers that you got it right.
Tell me
about
it.
I mean, we don't have that now. So it should open up this just desire to create and try different things until we reach a level that we can say, you know what, this is becoming consistent for me. This is great.
And I'm going to ask 3 more questions just because I'm going to run out of time. And one's not going to be a question. It's going to be an observation. In case it's not critically and clearly evident, what Mary Lou represents is the ability to take time, effort, market, access, whatever, intellectual capital, money capital you have, and make it work harder and harder for you. And it's terribly important you grasp this if you truly have a superior product, service, or value proposition, because you owe it to the right markets to really reach and serve them. Secondly, and then you can comment, Mary Lou, is, and this is very important, all categories of buyers, all stages of buyers, all distinctions of buyers, the Bettys and the Toms, they're not all worth the same, meaning some might deserve and justify a lot more time, attention, and resource investment, and some might not, but you'll never know that until you understand what you already know and you really let the data help you.
And the other thing to tell you is, I'm sure some of you are thinking right now, wow, Mary Lou, that's a lot of content that I'm writing. And what I want to tell you is this. I had just finished working with a $16 million company. They had 14 pieces of content for a $16 million company. So we took 1 to 2 pieces of that content and we repurposed it for each of those stages I just talked about. So we looked at the emotional pieces that came out of that content, and we looked at the logical pieces that came out of that content. And we organized them because, in a way, so that we hit the people at their different stages of thought. When you're unaware and when you're aware, things are more emotional at that level. So we wrote the content so that, and rewrote, repurposed the content so that it addressed that emotional state. Then we took more logic as we moved down and had more specificity around proof points and differentiation and why us. But we took one piece of content, we wrote it 5 different ways.
Yes, that's wonderful. 2 more points and then we'll conclude. The first one, and this I think is very, very important, and that is when you are communicating, it's important that if you're sending 50,000 tweets, or you've got this massive machine that's driving thousands of people to your website, or you're sending out 1,000 white papers a day or a week or a month, you always remember that they are being received and they are being consumed by one human being at a time. And how you communicate to one person is a lot different than people trying to talk to a million. You want to comment on that as a concluding?
No, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. What this is all about, really, if you want to study the greats, Jay is one of the greats in direct response. The theme of direct response is, I'm having a conversation with someone across the table from me. Each of your emails, each of your correspondence must be respectful of that. But you can leverage technology and leverage the database to help drive those conversations in a systematic way. That's the difference now.
That's great. So you have such a wealth of knowledge and ability and experience that can transfer and translate to any kind of a situation that if anybody... And it's universal. My work transfers to Japan, China, Singapore, Malaysia, Italy, all over. If anyone watching or listening, and I'm saying it because I don't know if the video is going to turn out adequate, wish to contact you, how would they do it?
They can go to my website, which is marylutyler.com, and there is a form on the website. You can contact me there.
Okay.
And I also have the ability to do conversational calls, and that's also available from the website.
Great. And if there's any material that is appropriate that you would like to send to me, I can get it translated and distributed there just to help them even have a greater grasp. So if it's something like that, but it's been a pleasure. And the only regret I have is that I don't have more time to spend interviewing you, because the knowledge that resides in your brain and the duality, the ability to understand the technology piece and the human connection piece is, and meaningful conversations, is profound. But thank you very much.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you, everyone.